This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk. Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
Hi, my name's Neil. I'm an OTI member. Most of my adult life, I've been sober curious or looking to go AF or doing stints of going alcohol free, but they would never stick. I think the reason they didn't stick was because there was lack of community or peer support. So once I found out about OTI and the community, I had to join straight away. Joining the OTI community has been the best alcohol-free decision I've ever made. It's such a fun, safe space to share your alcohol-free wins. There's always someone to give advice or celebrate with you. So if you're sober curious, come and join the fun at OTI. You won't regret it. It's a game changer.
So if you want to join us, go to overtheinfluence.co.uk. Welcome to yet another episode. We are still here of Over the Influence. Thank you for downloading us. Thank you for listening. As always, it is hugely appreciated. Before we introduce today's guest to you, just a recap as to who the hell we are, if you've never heard us before. My name is Sharon Hartley, based in Lancashire. Everyone calls me Sharon. No, they don't. Everyone calls me Shaz. Nobody calls me Sharon. Three kids, one husband, a beagle, and I am now officially 1,007 days alcohol free. Still will never not be bowled over by that. It still sounds mental to say it. My co-host, Freddie, is in the future in New Zealand. Morning, Freddie.
Good morning, good evening, and good night, Sharon Hartley. As always, I bow down to the queen of sobriety. Hello, everybody. My name is Freddie. I am 39. I was from the northwest of the UK, but as Shazza says, I'm taking a little bit of time out in New Zealand in the future.
And it's not just me and thee, is it? We have our third wheel. I am the sober rose between two thorns or something like that. I don't know what the saying is. Background Ben, who is now firmly in the foreground and very sober.
Yes, hello. I'm Ben. I live in Liverpool. I am coming up to a year alcohol-free very soon. I started because of these two. Started producing this podcast. Thought, they're banging on about this quite a lot. It must be something to it. Gave up booze and, yeah, never felt better. Said I was going to do the year, but really feeling like it's going to be a longer-term thing. Don't want to say forever, but I feel like I'm definitely going to go well over the year. Anyway,
well, you sort of don't really have a choice with the way things are going over the influence.
Yeah, we've got a few things in the pipeline, haven't we? Big announcements very soon. Very soon.
Watch this space, listen to this space. As always, this podcast is about you and your stories and your interaction. And the one thing that you adore is the guests that we bring your way. We have chatted to so many people on the pod, series two, series three. And if you don't mind me saying this, this last series, it has been brilliant and I have adored every single guest. But there's been a lot of fellas. There's been a lot of fellas, and I thought it was about time we balanced it up, and we've got a fellow Northern lass on, well, a fellow to me, fellow Northern lass on the podcast today to introduce to you. It is the amazing Davinia Taylor. Davinia, welcome. How are you?
I'm good. Actually, do you know what? I've got a bit of a sore throat. I'm like, oh my God, trust me to get ill in the middle of a pandemic. I don't know what it is, some child germ. But anyway, enough of that. Thank you for having me. I'm delighted to hear all your sobrieties are going well and you're positive about it. I have been sober. It'll be 13 years in September. And do you know what? I forgot last year, my best mate from school, Claire, texts me because she's like Miss Admin. We call her Spreadsheet. And she texts me last September and said, happy anniversary, babe. Happy sobriety birthday. And I went, is it? Is it September the 4th? I'd forgotten. So do you know what? It just becomes part of you.
Davinia, we share the same sober birthday. I think mine's actually September the 3rd. I just know it was the day the kids went back to school after a particularly hellish summer.
Yeah, this is it. Do you know what it is? There's something about September when you think, right, I mean, it's got to be that old-fashioned sort of memory, hasn't it? You know how every September I'm going to get a new pencil case, I'm going to do really well at school, I'm going to underline the date, and it's just been instilled for me to start fresh. Not January the 1st, because that's stupid to have a hangover and try and get sober like then, because everyone's still having a great time. But something about September, first week in September, there are so many birthdays. And there's me thinking I was special and different. Oh, well.
Well, you are special and different. I mean, we'll give you that. You're our guest. Of course, you're special and different. That is brilliant. 13 years. That's quite incredible. Davinia, before we talk about your whole, we use the word journey quite a lot on the podcast, bringing us up to date as to where you are today, which is your, you know, your health and fitness. You've got this amazing book out as well, It's Not a Diet, which we want to talk about a little bit later on. Can we just rewind, if you don't mind, possibly around 13 years? We had a chat yesterday. We were talking about your drinking past. And one thing that it rings in my ears, you said to me that your doctor, I think you said it was your doctor that said you were one drink away from death.
Yeah. And do you know what? Even that didn't scare me. I went and found myself another doctor. Do you know what I mean? That's how cunning and baffling that disease is. How you can't have a guy in a white coat who's done a liver scan on you and says you're one drink away from dying. I thought, yeah, well, you're obviously lying. I mean, why would he lie? So I went and got myself another doctor to do another test.
What did the other doctor say?
Well, I think I paid him enough for him to say, you're all right, stick to red wine.
Oh, my God. So you describe yourself as well as a recovering alcoholic, which I find quite surprising in that a lot of people we talk to never use the word alcoholic. Just talk me through that, Davinia.
Well, I mean, I can sort of put my hand on my heart and say I'm never going to try experimenting with it again because that's my primary drug of choice. You can take away cigarettes from me, like nicotine's the most powerful addictive substance on the planet, according to most scientists. That didn't touch the size of me. Even things like, I mean, I wasn't into class A drugs, but there's something about white wine and me that it just gelled with me. It gave me that feel-good factor that gave me confidence, it gave me energy and stuff. So for me, I will always know that my primary addictive substance and what I will kill me without hesitation is alcohol. I mean, you could call me an all-round addict. I mean, I'll probably try and get into anything with excess. But number one, I'm never going to mess around with alcohol because it'll lead me back to white wine in the morning type vibes. And I just need that in the forefront of my mind, because if I start playing around with wording, you know, I could talk myself out of it. I'm an alcoholic. I was born that way and I'll die that way. So that's the end of that conversation. I will not touch it again, because what is the point in even experimenting when I know I'm going to kick off a craving? I hate craving. Craving's rubbish. I hate craving for chocolate. I hate craving for cheese, but I hate craving for wine more than anything. So I'm not even going to test myself because it will kick off, because I tried moderation loads of times and it just doesn't work with me. I'm not a two glasses of wine type gal. I'm two boxes of wine and then we'll start talking.
Sorry. Oh, you're just making me laugh. It's just I completely 1000% know where you're coming from, except I was more rosé, a dry rosé.
A sophisticated South of France type drinker. Yeah.
I remember that. I thought I was in the South of France with my nice, classy box of rosé, but really I was in a pub car park, and it wasn't quite as glamorous that way.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you, Davinia, to pick on something that you said just then about being, you know, you felt that you were born this way. Can you explain a bit more about that? Because I believe that a lot of people kind of go on that journey, but how was it for you?
Yeah, I mean, what baffled me when I first started getting sober was the fact that I drank to excess in the first place. I mean, I understand people with trauma. I understand people who've been abused. They want to block a memory out. Now, I just couldn't understand why I had to block nothing out. I've not had a traumatic experience. I've not been abused. I have wonderful family. I've had a supportive network around me. I've been blessed with good health, apart from obviously the alcoholism, but I've turned that around now. But there was something in me that wouldn't let me switch off. And the whole aspect of me not having trauma just made me feel really bad about myself, that obviously I'm a gluttonous person who has just a penchant for excess, and I'm just like to be, you know, dismissed as, you know, spoiled or, you know, uncontrollable or something. But then after a few years of being sober and, you know, kind of like being a little bit confused about the whole spirituality that you get through AA, I started looking into the mechanics of addiction and alcoholism. And it was only after my mother died, she died of breast cancer. So I went and got the genetic test, you know, the BRCA gene test, just to see if I was a carrier. And it sort of sparked my imagination in what else do your genes have? What other predispositions are there? And incredibly, as I started digging into this, I started working with experts, and, you know, I spent quite a bit of money on these tests, and they told me that I have a genetic predisposition to being dopamine driven, which is that sort of drive, you know, definitely excessive. And also that I'm really good at detoxing alcohol. So together, and with my, obviously, you know, the people I was hanging around with, so it was kind of like, yeah, you can drink whenever you want. It was accepted. So together, that was a sort of perfect storm for me to kick off my A, addictive gene, and B, because I was never sick, or I didn't get woozy or I didn't get hot flushes, my body could really metabolize alcohol really well. So before you know it, my tolerance was way up on everybody else's. And together I was, you know, I was a drinking machine like yourself, Freddie. You know, I was like, go hard or go home. And that is just in my DNA. It's in my makeup. And there's nothing I can do about that unless I'm going to like go and do CRISPR and sort of like genetically modify myself. But that's probably way, way into the future because I'll end up with two heads or something. So I just started looking at that. And, you know, I was fascinated to see, you know, certain parts of the world, people are born with just an incapability of drinking because they're sick and they puke up and they faint, you know. Often people from Asia generally can't tolerate alcohol. And then you get me, sort of like Western European, slightly Irish background. We can put it away and we don't get sick. So it's a perfect storm. And that for me was such a relief because I was doing hypnotherapy thinking I had some dark traumatic secret. I blocked out, you know, I was like, why am I like this? But that's all I needed to know. It's in my genetic code. So navigate around it and don't drink. There you go.
I totally agree, Davinia. And it's a funny way to look at it. And I think of things in a very similar way. And this isn't about my past or whatever. And there's always things in pasts. But I didn't have any kind of really bad traumatic thing. And I was thinking about this the other day, and, you know, why did I drink and everything else? And I think the harsh truth is a lot of me just bloody loved it. And it's not, I know it's not, you know, an accepted thing to say, but I love the buzz. I love the pressure. I love the dopamine, as you say. And now being here in New Zealand, you know, we were looking at going to Queenstown in a few weeks' time. And, you know, I saw the world's biggest bungee jump. And I was like, yes, absolutely, 100%. And it is that thrill seeking, that dopamine, that all or nothing. And I think you said, you know, in terms of being an all-round addict and addicted to this buzz and this feeling. And now it's about how can we get that in maybe slightly more holistic ways than pouring alcohol down our throats 24/7.
And you know what? When you take away something like the ingredient alcohol, that particular chemical in excess is destructive. But you can use your dopamine brain to really focus yourself, razor sharp focus, and achieve unbelievable things that people without that drive simply cannot do that. So if harnessed, it's a gift. I mean, I've written a best-selling book. Are you joking me? That is so not me. You know, I couldn't even write my name. When I checked into rehab, I wrote my name backwards. My brain was that jumbled. That was how I was trying to sign my signature. I was writing from right to left instead of left to right. And I'm like, okay, maybe I might have to come here. That might be an indication I may be frying my neurons, but I'm not convinced just yet. I'll give it a week. But you know what I mean? This is brain damaging stuff. However, when you nurture your brain, give it the right food, give it the right nutrition, give it the right stimuli, it can be a superpower. And that's what I've learned on my sobriety journey. It's not just, you know, it's not just the bad times. It's like, okay, I've got this. Let's nurture it. Let's put the reins on it and let's see which direction we can push it.
I love that. And I think it's so easy for so many people out there to be like, oh, you know, poor me. I've messed up. I'm broken. I'm ruined. I can't fix this. What's wrong with me? Why not flip it around and say, in the right way, this can absolutely be a superpower to help people understand that they can do things that once they only imagined.
Exactly. And it's just a change of direction and a focus, because some of the most brilliant and funny creative minds have this ism, you know, and the more we talk about it, the more we can encourage each other and forget what happened in the past. We've all done terrible things. You know, we're just big enough to admit it. You know, we're okay. Say, right, okay, I did that. I was under the influence. And, you know, that wasn't the real me. This is the real me. Take away the alcohol that's masking my creativity, my brain process, my energy. And let's then judge me. Then judge me. But don't judge me when I'm bloody drunk in a car park squeezing out boxes of wine, you know?
Exactly. They were, you know, under the influence, but now you could definitely say they are over the influence. And with that, I will pass the mic to Shazza and Ben, because my work here is done, everybody.
Davinia, can I ask about, so, I mean, 13 years ago is when you gave up. What was your life like 14 years ago? What were you doing? Where were you?
Okay, I was, I think I was just coming out of a marriage, and I was in the grips of alcoholism. I was also in postnatal depression as well, which in a weird way was a blessing in disguise, because it took me to the rock bottom far faster. You know, I've been sober throughout most of my 30s and all my 40s so far. So unlike most people, I hit sobriety just on the tail end of my 20s. So I'm kind of really lucky. I've done a lot of like liver repair, thank God, and brain repair. So I've been quite lucky to hit rock bottom ever so quickly. But we're talking about night sweats. We're talking about waking up with that in the middle of the night with a sinking feeling. My nightmares would wake me up, and the only thing that would calm me would be alcohol. I mean, tremors, the whole shebang, I had it, and a terrible feeling of dread. And I was talking to someone the other day about it, and whenever something good happened to me, say, I don't know, someone called me up that I was desperate to speak to, or just something good, instinctively my brain would scan for something negative. And that was my sort of autopilot. And it would always be, yeah, but your mum's going to die. Yeah, but your dad's going to be in a car crash. Yeah, but you're this, you're that. And it was consistent. I was not allowed to have joy while I had all this particular chemical in my body. And I think a lot of that was hormonal. I had IVF, and no doctor would ever tell you that, by the way, once you have the baby, you're going to drop dramatically in all the happy hormones. And, you know, you're just basically told you've got the baby blues. And the only way for me to get unblue was to drink. That was, like I said, that was my drug of choice. And at that point, it was my medicine of choice. And I have never felt so terrified in my life. And funnily enough, now I'm coming up to the perimenopause. I've had my estrogen levels checked and they are really, really low. And that correlates with postnatal depression. So I'm on guard. I'm going to hack into my hormones, because I know a lot of women who've had to go back out there drinking, who've been sober 20 years because of menopause. So, you know, there is so many, it's not just a case of being sober, it's being sober well, you know, and understanding your body and your biochemistry, because it's not just a case of putting the drink down, it's finding out about yourself so you can hack into moods and different risk factors as well, you know. So I'm finding this really interesting and empowering, that I'm not just white knuckling from one day to the next anymore like I was back then. I didn't have any information. I didn't even know what alcoholism was.
You might not expect this question from me next, being a 30-something man. I am very interested in women's bodies. The reason being, I produce a podcast called The Vagina Monopod, which is all about menstrual and gynecological health. I think men should know more about this stuff, but that's a side note. What is the connection between alcohol or no alcohol and menopause? I feel like Shaz should have asked that question. Sorry about
no,
that.
No, I'm really glad you asked. I'm learning as we go along here. It's fascinating because I am
certainly so am I.
Couple of years older than you, Davinia, and it is fascinating stuff. So yeah, please.
Basically, you've got your happy hormones, serotonin, and you've got dopamine and you've got oxytocin. Now then, women obviously have estrogen and progesterone. Now then, as you head into perimenopause, which isn't the menopause, which is like classically when you're 50 and your periods stop, we are talking a decade before. You can stop ovulating, yet you're still having regular periods. But because you're not ovulating, you're not producing much estrogen and you're not producing much progesterone. Estrogen makes you feel happy and warm and motivated. Progesterone calms anxiety, makes you feel at well with the world, that you're not under attack. You take those away, that sounds to me a little bit like a fearful hangover. And for me, a fearful hangover, anxiety, feeling bad about myself, thinking doom, 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 that's when I'd reach for a drink. So for me, I need to know my sexual hormones, my progesterone and estrogen, even my testosterone, because men should check that as well, so I don't feel like I need to reach for a drink to pep myself up, because that's when I'm vulnerable as well. And for God's sake, GPs won't even see you about a menopause if you are under the age of 50. So never mind if you're still having a regular period. So this is something you've got to do for yourself as a woman or a man who's married to a woman who is struggling. You need to get your hormones tested. And I'm not just talking a blood test. It's called a Dutch Complete. And you wee on a stick, a bit like a pregnancy test, every single day for a month. You send it off to the USA. It comes back and it'll give you your levels. Now, I know my estrogen levels from day one, which is when you start bleeding, to day four, are lower than someone who's postmenopausal. And I asked myself, why do I feel so bad for a little part of the month? And I say this to my doctor, look, I feel really bad. I feel really suicidal. And, you know, I feel hungover and I'm tired and I just hate myself and I'm not motivated. And I just think something awful is going to happen. He'll whack me in on antidepressants and he won't even investigate the other hormones. So the technology is there. It's just that here in the UK, we don't have access to it yet. And I would hate for women to be sober for a certain length of time and have to go out again to drink to just try and make themselves feel better, because it's like, what else can I do? I can't survive this. I'm at suicidal levels of low estrogen. So for me, men and women need to know their hormones, particularly when they're sober, because you've got no way of prepping yourself up. And that's when could be a really dangerous time for your sobriety, you know? Because it's all about how you feel mentally. And it's not just about being spiritual and having, you know, group hugs and all this. That will help. But if you're operating on a sub-hormonal level, you're going to feel bad no matter how many people pat you on the back, because your inner monologue is toxic.
Yeah. That is fascinating. I'm like that. Tell me more. Tell me more. Because I am a lady of a certain age, perimenopausal and all that. That is, really interesting stuff. Davinia, referring back to something you said a little bit earlier, you were on the cusp of your 30s when you became sober, and we've talked about this before and people say to me, oh, you shouldn't wish you'd done it sooner. I do, you know, I'm 47 and I started doing this, so 47, when did I start doing it? It's 3 years,
a thousand this year. Days ago.
A thousand days ago, work it out, mid-40s. And I drunk all through my 30s. That's when it ramped up, to be honest with you. And I look back and, you know, I look at Ben, who's in his 30s. I look at Freddie clinging on to his 30s by the skin of his nearly 40-year-old teeth. And you did this in your, you know, touching 30, Davinia. So I think every credit, I think that is incredible. My age, I see so many women, so many mums, you know, obsessed with the, because I was there, by the way, this was me, you know, mummy's little helper, wine o'clock culture, it's 5 o'clock somewhere. And now I look around and I think, I want to scream that there is another way, that you don't have to do this. I don't know what point I'm trying to make.
I know what you mean. It is ingrained in our society. But the trouble is, we're also ashamed of saying anything about it because we always think it's got a seedy undertone to it. Not like I've just said, it's in your DNA. So, like, if you can't have peanuts, you don't have bloody peanuts. Nobody bloody asks you, do they? But I know what you mean. It's in our culture. It's in society that it's a treat. It's the same when I see people buying cakes. I'm like, you think you're treating yourself? Like, if I watch Loose Women, oh, let's do a cake. Let's have a treat. It's not a treat. It's going to put you in a bad mood. And everyone doesn't seem to fast forward. It's all that instant gratification. And, you know, we're all long enough in the tooth to realise that, you know, a cake is going to make you feel knackered afterwards. You're going to get that carb coma. You're going to get a lull from the insulin leaving your body because you've had sugar. Same with wine. You're not going to feel better.
But there comes a point. It's so normal. And I was there where a bottle of wine is perfectly acceptable. It's only three glasses. It's only three large glasses. You know what I mean? You'd work it all out. And it's perfectly fine on a school night to have a bottle of wine. And you get to the point where you think, Jesus Christ, at what point did this become normal? And I didn't, you know, until I stopped and look back now and I think it's not. But it is so normalised by friendship groups and by society and by every bloody way you turn.
I think people have become really bad at communicating without it as well. You know, they just don't have any sort of, we don't have that conversation in us. It's so lubricating to have wine and to get a connection and a complete bond. That because it's so available, I mean, you get it in petrol stations, you know what I mean? It's like always there. And we don't even have to think about making an effort because the spiel just comes out. I don't know about you, I can't stand being around drunk people. I think you're lying, number one. And by the way, if you tell me how proud you are of me again and put your arm around me while you're drunk, I'm just going to punch you square in the jaw. Do you know what? I'm dead proud of you. I mean, not like me. I mean, I can always control myself, but you've done dead good. Yeah. And I'm like, so why don't you put that glass of wine down? Oh, no, not tonight. Not tonight, obviously. Yeah. All right, mate. Okay, I'll see you on the morrow. I mean, denial, that big river.
We're just going to take a quick break from this episode of Over the Influence. As always, thank you so much for listening. If you are enjoying what you're listening to, please do leave us a review with your podcast provider. A review and a rating would be hugely appreciated. Thank you so much. Just wanted to share a little bit of info with you about one aspect of our online community. One of the best bits about it, and it's all pretty fantastic, is the fact that our members can join a Zoom call. In fact, not just one. You can jump on as many as fit in with your diary. I host them myself, as does Ben. They are at lunchtime. They are in the evening. We've got a really early one on a Saturday morning for the early risers in the UK. There was probably a Zoom call that will fit in with you. They are private. It's a chat all about alcohol-free life. It's about motivation. It's about connection. It's about support. And it's about having a really good laugh as well. Our members' feedback is that these Zoom calls are key to their alcohol-free journeys. Please do take a look at what we do, overtheinfluence.co.uk. And if you want any more information at all about the Zoom calls that we host within the community, drop us an email, otihq@overtheinfluence.co.uk. Let's get back to the episode.
Davinia, I'm reading the press release for It's Not a Diet, your book, and there's a line in here that I absolutely love because it sounds so cool. Davinia gradually biohacked her way to optimum health. And obviously that's what we've been talking about in terms of you looking at the kind of science and the mechanics of how the body works and health and fitness. It also talks about how after you lost your mom, you turned to food. Obviously, by this point, you were sober. And you said you took refuge in food. Was that because you weren't drinking? Was that your replacement for drinking?
So, well, we've all put down the drink here. So, normally, people don't realise that, you know, wine, beer, whatever alcohol it is, it's got a ton of sugar in it anyway. So I used to say to myself, I've got a very sophisticated palate. I'll only be having cheese for dessert along with my port, you know, not realising that it's liquid syrup. Not that I actually had port, but do you know what I mean? So I didn't realise that I was actually drinking sugar as well. So when I went down to rehab, they told me to keep sweets in my pocket at all times. So if I ever felt a craving coming on, to just have some sweets and always have sugar and always have bread, which obviously converts to sugar. Now, this again is just another way to fix that dopamine drive that I reckon most of us have here on this podcast, that reward, that nice sort of like hormone that makes you feel like, okay, let's do this. Okay, I'm going to take on the world. Positivity, energy, you know? So obviously, I was very upset about my mum. I felt very low and very sort of, well, unmotivated and a little bit scared. So I started reaching to try and hack into my dopamine pathways, not knowing that, you know, having pizzas and having sweets and then doing the salt and vinegar crisp followed by the chocolate, you know, that sweet, savoury sort of cycle. I didn't realise I was trying to, I was actually biohacking, but in a really bad way, to try and boost my mood. And like I said, once an addict, always an addict. I think most of the population were addicted to something. But yeah, I kind of like replaced the alcohol, not knowing, with food and with processed food as well. A lot of vegetable oil, that does the same on your brain, you know, it does a job on your brain. And it does hack into your thought process and your mood and your feelings. And you go up and down and up and down. So you're always reaching for snacks. You're always reaching for anything. And basically, it's stopping yourself from flatlining, which I was doing at the time. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, once an addict, always an addict. But just for me, that was sort of keeping me pepped up. But it was also making me very large and very inflamed and very vulnerable. I felt vulnerable because I wasn't fit. I wasn't healthy. And I knew it as well because my joints were hurting. My wrists were swollen. My feet were swollen. You know, my knees as well. I'm like, why are my knees swollen? But I was inflamed and my brain was as well. So I was really depressed. And it's interesting how we do generally self-destruct as, you know, as a community, we do press the self-destruct button on a lot of things. So it was a case of me having to dig myself out of that one as well. And once again, that's where science stepped in for me, looking at this dopamine pathway and understanding what was triggering me and also understanding how the big food companies know about this and they put ingredients in to exactly entice those dopamine pathways. So we keep going back for more and more and more. They put it's called the bliss point. It's a mathematical equation that all there's about five big companies like Kraft, Unilever, I think General Mills is another one as well. Anyway, these are the big guys who employ Harvard mathematicians, not dietitians, mathematicians, to create the bliss point, which is the most addictive part on a curve, on a graph, as to where that they position the sweetness and the savoury and the fat in a food. And it'll keep all of us consumers coming back for more. And that's there's only five companies in the world that manufacture these foods. So yeah, there's drugs everywhere, man.
It's so strange, isn't it? Because I'm going to ask your advice in a second, Davinia, but I think for some reason, we don't associate food with how we can change our mood. And I think there's obviously, you know, when you're hungry, you're angry and you're hangry and everything else, I can certainly testify to that. But it's weird because you think, you know, pouring a whole box of rosé down your throat and you could say, OK, yeah, that's going to affect my mood. But I don't believe that we think that what we eat can affect our brain and our bodies in such the same way, when at the end of the day you're putting a substance in your body. But for some reason, if I'm having a cake or you know, a bounty bar or something, then oh, my mood's not going to change at all.
It absolutely will. I mean, it's called the gut brain axis. Now, serotonin's another hormone. Now, serotonin is something that you get when you're in a group of people and you feel contented, or you're with your family and things are going well and you just feel very calm, contented, and almost like very positive, but not excitable like dopamine. Dopamine's the excitable one. Now, dopamine can burn through serotonin. So people like you and I need to understand we need more serotonin. We've burnt through a ton of it in the past. So serotonin, 95% of it is manufactured in the gut. And if you don't look after your gut, you won't manufacture enough of it, you will become depressed. If your gut is inflamed with inflammatory ingredients like gluten, refined sugar and veg oil, it will diminish your serotonin instantaneously. You'll feel blue, you'll feel down. So basically now, fortunately, GPs are coming around to the understanding that our gut and our brain are linked, but not many people will acknowledge that not just sugar, but vegetable oil, seed oil, so your sunflower oil, your rapeseed oil, your canola oil, it's known in the USA, your soy oil will annihilate your gut microbiome and you will put yourself at risk from depression. So this is what I wanted to get out with my book. You know, you can hack your mood, you can repopulate your gut, and you can make yourself feel better. You can feel optimal, you know, with all these little tricks, knowing your hormones, knowing your gut microbiome, knowing your sleep. You know, all these things have such a monumental effect on my mood that I don't crave alcohol. I don't even crave pizza, you know, and that coming from an addict is pretty something. I don't have the craving anymore. I mean, what? It's not just abstinence. I just don't want it. I've got other things to do that I know can make me instantaneously happy.
I often have that question to myself, you know, after being whatever I am, 830-ish days alcohol-free. When my mood gets low, when I'm struggling with something, when I'm lying awake all night in bed with stuff going around my brain, and I think, hang on, this isn't fair. You know, I did what I was supposed to. I gave up alcohol and everything's supposed to be bloody brilliant now. But I say that sitting here now, having slept 5 hours last night and having a Haribo binge last night before I went to bed. And the plan was to have some pancakes in 20 minutes time, but that ain't going to happen anymore. My kid's now having granola for his birthday breakfast, and I'm changing it all right now. But
be very careful on the granola. Make sure you turn it around and look for rapeseed oil or sunflower oil, and if it's there, get rid of it. This stuff is everywhere, and now I would rather have sugar than these oils because our body understands sugar. We've been having sugar since the dawn of time in fruit, in honey, even processed refined sugar. Our body understands it can be burnt off. What it doesn't understand is rapeseed oil, sunflower oil. It was manufactured back in the 50s to lubricate and clean farmyard machinery, and now it was rebranded when the low fat sort of low saturated fat sort of phenomena came around, and it was rebranded as things like margarine. So This needs a lot of work as a public campaign to get us eating butter and animal fat and avocado oil if you're vegan and olive oil instead of sunflower oil, rapeseed oil and soy oil. This is fundamental for our brains to function properly. The evidence that's coming out about this stuff, it is just causing depression, obesity and heart disease. And I was flabbergasted when I read an incredible book by Dr. Catherine Shannon called Deep Nutrition, all about this. And it's incredible how, you know, even health bars, protein bars, alternative milk, they all have sunflower oil in. And it is wrecking your brain and your gut simultaneously. But it's being touted as a health product. So I'd rather my kid had a load of candy floss than had veg oil. And that's how strong I feel about it. They can run off the sugar. You can't run off veg oil. It sits there. It penetrates your cells. It ruins the cell walls. And it inflames your arteries and it inflames your brain. So that's my biggest tip when it comes to changing your diet. Don't freak out about the sugar. That's nothing compared to the veg oil.
I clearly need to buy your book, Davinia, which I'll be doing straight after
this. Oh, I've got a load here if you want me to post you on.
Oh, amazing.
I just wanted to rewind. We started off chatting, Davinia, talking about the fact, and it just stuck with me what you said to me yesterday. It just stuck with me. You were one drink away from death, and we've been chatting for however long now, and you've got a book out, and it is called "It's Not a Diet." It's a Sunday Times bestseller. It's phenomenal, that journey from that rock bottom to where you are today. I follow your Instagram. I find it really, really inspiring. I think it is amazing. Aside from your physical transformation, which is just incredible.
Well, you can see I'm inflamed. I mean, but you know, the funny thing is, I don't know if you can see it on the book, but where I'm much larger and really inflamed, I've got a manicure and pedicure. It's like the only thing I could control about myself. I have my nails done. But when I'm like lean and I'm all over it, the last thing I'm bothered about is having nice red nails. You know, I'm doing stuff. Yeah. I'm like, you know, in the garden with the kids, I'm filthy, whatever. But it's funny when I just see that whenever I'm like overweight and depressed, my nails get done.
It's mad, isn't it? It's those little things that perk us up.
Davinia, can I ask? You said once an addict, always an addict. Are you addicted to maintaining optimal health?
I'm kind of addicted to maintaining optimal mind long term. However, I do have Chinese takeaways, but I hack around it. You know, I've got like this 80s childhood that on a Saturday night, you go to the Chinese takeaway, which here in Clitheroe also doubles up as an Indian, a pizza and a hamburger joint.
Brilliant.
So something for everyone
Brilliant.
There. So there's six of us. Always someone throws in a curveball who wants a pizza and someone wants a kebab. Anyway, he's got it covered down in Clitheroe. So that's that. But I sometimes get this urge, like you do, to have a Chinese takeaway. And what I do with that is I will have some activated charcoal to hand. It's really cheap stuff. You get it anyway in Holland and Barrett or online. Activated charcoal, which is a very, very, very absorbent compound. It's made from coconut shells that have been burnt. And it will literally grab on to the MSG, the sugar, and those veg oils I was talking about. And I will have some diet tea or something that's got like, that makes you go to the toilet a bit. I'll have that before I go to bed at night. And all that will just bypass my gut. It'll all be bound onto it and it'll disappear. And I'll still feel a little bit hungover after I've eaten it, but nowhere near like I would have done if I'd not taken the activated charcoal. So I'll take about three before and about three after, and it'll just mop up all the inflammatory ingredients I've forced down my throat. So it's just a case of hacking around it, because for me to get a low mood is to risk my sobriety, and that's something I'm not prepared to do, you know. So I've just learned these tricks of the trade, and it's kept me sober so far. So fingers crossed it will do for the rest of my life, and I'll be this positive even when I'm in a wheelchair just generally shouting at people. I mean, that'll give me pleasure anyway.
The reason I ask is because if your brain, if you're created, your genetic makeup means that you crave dopamine. Do you now get that from this? Do you get that from...
I get it from... I need it. I need it to survive. I need it to put my thoughts in order. It's a bit ADD. I think most people are on the spectrum. It's just how you are on the spectrum as to whether you get diagnosed. So for me to order my brain thoughts, to get my day in order, I need dopamine. To even like I said, send bills and like RSVP things and sort out emails, I need dopamine. And for me to get that hit, rather than wine or drugs or medication or whatever, I just go for a 5K run. Yeah, I put some house music on and it just activates some part of my brain, and it just, boom, thoughts come into my brain just without me even trying. And I have a motivation to do horrific paperwork and admin. So that's what I need to just get me through the day. After I've done that, most things normally slot into place quite easily. And I do not get a craving for alcohol or sugar at all, because I've had my fix. But in the way I was designed to, a millennia ago, you know, before we had petrol stations with booze, which actually I don't think they had when I was drinking. That would have been so convenient.
It's weird, in the supermarkets here in New Zealand, they sell wine and beer, but they don't sell spirits. I'm not buying any of them at the moment, but it's a slightly different way of doing things. The fact that if you wanted to go and get a bottle of the hard stuff, you'd actually have to make the effort to go somewhere. And then I walked into one of those liquor shops, and bloody hell, it's like a kid walking into Toys R Us when you're not allowed to buy anything. And but yeah, it's a different setup. But you're totally right, Davinia. I think and I certainly agree with you with the house music and the exercise. I think we've probably both got a bit of a clubbing background in the past. But yeah, I mean, again, I've been away for 3 days and I did no exercise, no running. And last night, again, I found myself getting cranky and just being a bit of a dick, to be honest. And I thought, oh, that's why, because I haven't had my headphones in. I haven't had my, you know, my late 90s chance classics turned up to 11, and I haven't done that 5K.
Exactly. Some people, it's yoga. I can't stand yoga. Can't stand it. Does my head in. It really annoys me. I just can't do it as well as her or him, and I just storm out. So I'm much better on my own little private podium, thinking it's the Hacienda 1995, and obviously it's not. It's Clitheroe. And I am 43, not 19, and I certainly don't have hot pants on. So, yeah, I mean, for it's whatever keeps you sober, you know, and whatever keeps you away from your primary, I think is great. And we shouldn't judge people for doing things. You know, some people like calligraphy, whatever, you know, if it makes you a better person, enjoy.
I know, yeah, sometimes I still go for the hot pants just because that's what it feels like I need.
Well, we can't see the bottom half of you on Zoom, Freddie. So.
Oh, it's probably a good job. If only you could, believe me.
The surprise is I'm not wearing anything. Right.
Taylor, an absolute stack of food for thought there. Not just sobriety, but you see what I did there?
Yeah.
You should be on the radio, Shazza.
Yeah, you know. It's been fascinating. Thank you so much. As we mentioned, your book's out. It's called It's Not a Diet. Davinia, congratulations, by the way. Sunday Times bestseller. Get you.
This is she it? Who used to fall asleep in English, you know. It was a nice, like, I think it was Monday afternoon double English. I'll have a nice little nap here. Excellent. Brilliant. So ridiculous. Brilliant. But I made up. I hope some of my tips help you guys. And, you know, I've done it the long way around. So I hope some of these tips can fast track you into feeling tip top for the rest of our lives, actually.
Yeah, it's brilliant. It's brilliant. It just shows you removing booze and look where we are now. You know, look where you are now. It's absolutely incredible. If people want to find out more about you and if they want to buy the book, Davinia, where can they do that?
Well, the book's available on Amazon. I think it's going into Asda as well. And if you give me a follow at Davinia Taylor, there's a link in my bio, which sounds ridiculous for me to say that, but
it,
yeah, link
in bio.
Because, well, I'm not an influencer because I don't get paid for anything. You know, I just put all the stuff that I've bought there. If anything, I'm a consumer who just shows you what she's bought. You know, so I really enjoy sort of putting things on there and my actual opinion. So yeah, give me a follow on Instagram and DM me if you're struggling or whatever, and I'm there for you.
No, thank you so much, Davinia. I am going to be getting your book and implementing the tips, and yeah, I will be updating you on social media and tagging you as to how I'm getting on.
Brilliant. I'll be so interested. So interested. We're very similar.
Definitely.
Hello, it's Ben from Over the Influence. You've made it all the way to the end of this episode, and we thank you greatly for it. I just wanted to quickly let you know that if you love Quitlet and want some kind of Quitlet on the go, then have you had a look at our Over the Influence blog? It's completely free, overtheinfluence.co.uk/blog. It's got listener stories on there. It's got articles about alcohol-free life on there, opinion pieces on there. It's really good. We're working really hard to keep it updated. Go and have a look, overtheinfluence.co.uk/blog. Have a good read through. There's loads of stuff now, actually, to go back to the back catalogue of our blogs as well, if you never discovered it. And thank you again for listening to this week's episode. We love having you with us. We love shouting about sobriety. And of course, we'll be back same time next week. See you then.